season is also a very difficult season for some who have loved ones who are either not here or they're hurting. We'll hope that you will be with those that are less fortunate as we go through this and be with this council as we deliberate on these issues tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Cub Scout Troop 320, we have Ian, Jackson, Micah, Gavin, Zachariah, and Logan, and their troop leader is Casey, and is it Moss? Is that
Mose?
Okay. All right, these gentlemen are going to do our pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right, we have your consent agenda in front of you, but have one item that we'd like to ask. Item 10, we would like to ask to please move that. We're going to move that to new business. So any motion that we make needs to be void of item 10.
I'll move for approval with with approval of number 10.
Second.
Motion and second. Ms. Wright, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Skills Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. All right, we'll move into old business. We have Ordinance 19-OZ-40, amending the West Lawn PUD along Shores Road.
Second.
Motion and second. Ms. Wright.
Vice Mayor Skills Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. Ordinance 19-OZ-41, zoning for property located along South Rutherford Boulevard. This is the second and final reading.
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion and second. Ms. Wright, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Skills Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. We'll move to Ordinance 19-OZ-42, zoning for property located along Joby Jackson Parkway in Elam Road.
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion and second.
Vice Mayor Skills Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. We'll move to new business and we'll consider acquisition of property for the Murfreesboro Transit Facility. Mr. Kerr.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. Before you have acquisition of approximately 5.4-acre parcel, State Route 99 and Bridge Avenue, for the city's transit facility. Staff recommends approving the acquisition and authorize staff to prepare and execute the necessary documents for future closing. Planning Commission considered the site as December 18th meeting and unanimously recommended approval of the acquisition. The planned Murfreesboro Transit Facility will provide a centralized location for rover operations and RTA relax and ride terminal with a park and ride facility. The site at State Route 99 and Bridge Avenue presents a viable location for the facility as it offers sufficient land to handle future planning services with convenient connectivity to major thoroughfares. Because the city will receive state and federal assistance for the site, acquisition and development, the project must be completed in accordance with federal property acquisition standards. In order to remain eligible for state and federal assistance in the development of the transit facility, the city, with limited exceptions, must not be obligated to purchase the property until the NEPA certificate is completed and other federal requirements related to the property are satisfied. Because of the length of the time required for the NEPA certification, the proposed contract has a significant due diligence period. Therefore, the proposed contract allows the city to terminate the agreement at any time and allow the owner to continue marketing the property. If another acceptable offer is made, the city has the option to forego the purchase, in which case the earnest money will be returned in full, or close on its contract in 60 days. The site has been appraised for $1.25 million. A review appraisal will be ordered upon approval of this acquisition by council. Earnest money deposit of $50,000 will be placed into escrow upon execution of the contract, with a balance of $1.2 million plus normal closing costs will be due at closing. Funding is anticipated to be 80% federal, 10% state, and 10% local funds. With that, I will answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Kerr, we originally talked about this facility going on to East Main Street.
I guess that is correct.
West Main Street.
West Main, yes, sir. West Main and Bridge.
Yeah. What brought it to where you feel like this is a better site?
There's a couple reasons. We started out, we were kind of running two projects separately, a park and ride facility as well as our transit facility. This particular location will provide us really a better access to... It provides us better access to the excuse me. It's a better facility because it's larger. Our existing site was pretty small and compact. We're having issues with really the connectivity with RTA and future growth. This will definitely provide us a better location, a longer-term decision. It's more of a 50-year decision than a short-term decision where the previous site was located.
Okay. All right, any questions for Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Kerr, is there any benefit traffic flow-wise to having it located closer to the interstate and not in the downtown area? Is that not a true benefit of having
it? It's definitely a true benefit for the RTA circulation back and forth to Nashville.
All right, any other questions?
What's the timeline on this coming to fruition?
Well, we need to do our due diligence. As soon as we can, I guess, get started on the development of the NEPA, but we're hoping that could maybe take 3 months to get that complete and then start into the design phase. So realistically speaking, being optimistic, hopefully within a year.
The other site didn't have a park and ride.
That's correct. We barely had enough parking for staff parking.
Right.
Mr. Kerr, are there any DBE goals in this?
Yes, there will be on the final construction.
Okay.
And that will be determined based on the amount of work associated.
No other questions. I move for approval.
Second.
Motion is second. Ms. Wright, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Scales Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shackley.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. All right, we'll move into Ordinance 19-048. It's a budget amendment from Finance.
Mayor, this is a self-balancing budget amendment. We're getting a grant for the fire from Firehouse Subs. I think that was presented by the fire chief recently, and we're going to purchase a boat and trailer with those revenues, so we'll be increasing revenue and expense by the same amount. And Parks and Recreation is receiving $60,000 in a donation for Adams Tennis Complex, and that is for a specific purpose of a play site smart tennis system. So it is a net zero budget amendment, but we need to get that in so we can spend those funds.
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion is second. Ms. Wright, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Scales Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Way.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. All right, we'll move into our resolution portion. Resolution 19-R30, approving the sale of the assets of the Murfreesboro Electric Department to Middle Tennessee Electric Membership Corporation. Mr. Tindall.
Yes, Mayor, Council. This is a request for Council to approve a resolution authorizing the sale of the city's electric department to Middle Tennessee Electric Membership Corporation. You'll recall that the proposed transaction was presented to council on December the 5th. On December the 10th, we met with employees and answered their questions about the transaction. On December the 12th, we held a public information session. It was open to the public, and tonight we've invited public comment earlier this evening. Tonight, the proposal is submitted for council decision. Just a brief overview of the transaction. Transaction is to transfer all electric department operations to Middle Tennessee Electric. The exception would be a portion of the real estate, which is the MED office and the adjacent storage yard. The transaction price, $245 million. $43 million of that would be in the initial payment, and $202 would be incremental payments over 15 years. The total transaction amounts about $302 million. All employees will be offered positions. The former MED customers will be represented by two members on the Middle Tennessee Electric's Board of Directors, and Middle Tennessee Electric will maintain its headquarters in Murfreesboro as it has for the last 80 years. The transaction will not affect rates for electrical service. It is necessary also to submit this transaction to the TVA for approval. For the assignment of its of the city's power purchase contract with the TVA, and part of TVA's review will be to determine benefits to the ratepayers and the effect of the transaction, if any, on rates. Staff believes the transaction will benefit the ratepayers, who are all right now citizens of the city, by providing funding for community investments. And so there will be later a recommendation made on, we've had some discussion on, but there will be more definitive recommendations and discussions on use of proceeds. But in essence, it's this will be a reinvestment in long-term assets of the city. I think council has made that clear in their previous discussions. Many of those investments will have economic development opportunities, which would benefit the city for many, many years to come. And so I'm available to answer any questions of council, and we would ask for approval of the resolution.
I want to read. I've tried to put this down to be concise, but I want to, if you all indulge me, let me try to go what we need to decide tonight and sort of summarize that. The question before the council is whether to sell the electric department operations to MTEMC and whether it's beneficial to the residents of Murfreesboro. I think it would be beneficial to go back and really go where this process started. May 29, 2015, we had an original MOU that came in that MTEMC had interest in MED. Some of us were on the council then. If I knew what I know now, being an inexperienced mayor at the time, I think I definitely would have handled things much differently. I was naive to think that we could have that discussion void of politics and that we would just have the discussion to talk about as a council what would be best for the community as a whole. And I was wrong. What ensued was not fitting to how we handle things in this community and for many years, and not representative of how our governing bodies have always made decisions. I say that as we have someone like John Hood that comes and talks to us and how those things have been handled for many years. Ultimately, evaluation came back in 2016, and MTEMC withdrew their offer of consideration. As a council, we learned a lot about that process. We learned that the independence of the utility was not necessarily a good thing, especially with MED being one of the largest assets of the city. We learned that the Power Board and the council could, and we have worked together, but ultimately some changes needed to be made. So in 2017, the council passed an ordinance that reconstituted the Power Board to align closer with most all other boards in the city. And I do want to say Richard Stone is sitting out in the audience. I don't see any of our other Power Board members here. Richard Stone, Rick Hardesty, Ross Bradley, Irene McDonald. They do a phenomenal job and have done a phenomenal job. Fast forward to August and Rick LaLance.
The esteemed.
That was not an accident.
Eddie has served on the Power Board. Rick has served on the Power Board. I have served on the Power Board. So we've all been able to serve there. Fast forward to 2018 at our swearing-in ceremony. for several of us. I made the comment for our city to continue to grow and face the challenges we need to continue to work on relationships with partners in our community, and that MTMC and Rutherford County were partners that we needed to work with, and we needed to strengthen our relationships, and I meant that. Over the past 3 or 4 years, we've had talks with Rutherford County and partnerships with Rutherford County that we've never had before. We've worked to partner in EMS. We're working now to partner in solid waste. We've partnered in fire and rescue. We're continuing to partner in how we better serve our students and our community. So that discussion also began on how we could partner with MTMC. And that included MED staff as well as city staff that had that discussion, especially since the majority of our annex property would be served by Middle Tennessee Electric. During those discussions, staff who mainly were not present at the time in 2015 felt like it was time to talk about these discussions again. And so I was extremely reluctant when staff first came and said, hey, we'd like to talk about this again, because I had already been punched several times after having this initial conversation. And I was very blunt and said, if you think it's a good idea for the city, I'm not going through that again. You need to be able to show how it's a good deal for the city, and you need to be able to not only convince me, you need to be able to talk to the other council members about that. And that's where the process, and that's why we're here tonight. Staff has put together a proposal in front of us with lots of different information. We've heard from MED, we've heard from Middle Tennessee Electric, we've heard from staff, we've heard from residents at our public session in the Rotunda, and now we've heard from residents in a public hearing or a public forum. And I want to say thank you to Councilman Shacklett for having the idea to make sure and extend that public forum. So, Bill, thank you for that idea. As a council, we need to make the following decisions. Is it a good deal for the city of Murfreesboro, and what will the future look like with MED or without MED? If the council does decide to sell, what will be done with the funds? I don't think we have a consensus on what's going to be done, but we do have a consensus on what we have to do on capital improvements moving forward. That decision on how to manage the proceeds will come later if we make that decision. The question tonight needs to be summarized as follows. Will our citizens benefit from an additional $300 million in revenues over the next 15, 20, or 30 years, or should we keep things as they currently are? We've also, and I want to make sure, and as I say, keep things as we currently are, we have a phenomenal electric department, more so than anyone that's sitting here. I have spent time in a ditch with some of the guys who install some of our electricity, and we're not talking about selling an asset that is not a good asset or that we don't have a good employee. So to all the MED employees, I want to first say I'm sorry you've had to go through this since 2015. I'm sorry that you've been put in limbo, but we appreciate the work that y'all do. We've all seen the recommended CIP. The numbers in the CIP are much larger than what we're talking about selling an electric company for. The council, for those in the audience, the council decides every year on how we're going to fund our CIP and how we're going to do that, spend that money. So this is not about pet projects. This is not about how we can throw money away. This is about how we address needs for the future. And whether this happens or not, that's a discussion that this council is going to have to take up, because we have a lot of infrastructure that needs to be done. Our city is going to continue to grow, and with that growth comes increasing demands for services and infrastructure. We don't know what the revenues are going to need to meet those demands. Typically, the only effective means available to assure our adequate revenue is the city's property tax, and we all know how that discussion went this past budget. The proposed transaction presents a unique alternative, that opportunity is to convert one asset to assets in another form, and most importantly, that conversion does not diminish services to taxpayers. If the council makes this decision, the use of the proceeds requires good decisions. It's not an alternative, and this is something I think we've all learned. This is not an alternative to careful deliberation in revenues and expenses. It can be an alternative to limiting property taxes, but it is not a stop-all for eliminating future increases in property taxes. I might suggest to assist that with those decisions, and I think this is something the council is going to have to discuss coming up, that we put financial policies in place on how we set those better policies. I think going on what Councilman Smotherman said, at the public here or the public comment section, if any of us would have known lowering our tax rate to 94 cents from $2.40 over a 15-year period would put us where we are with our revenues, no one would have sat up here and done that. So we need to look at that. We don't know what the future is going to be. We don't know what circumstances will exist in the future. So it's not for us to judge whether future spending decisions are good or bad. Only those making here, and Mr. Long said this early in the comment section earlier, we don't know what decisions councils will make in the future, but you can rest assured the decisions that we make today are going to determine what council decisions have to make, because we've seen that. For every future bad decision that is limited, it's equally possible that we limit a good decision that the council can make. So what we need to do as a council, we can talk about spending the funds, but I mean, I think what we really need to talk about overall is this something that we want to consider. And I will say this, if we decide not to do this, then this discussion needs to be done. You know, having a discussion come up every 2 or 3 years is not healthy for an organization. And you know, I think the reason that this discussion for the employees, I was Googling today, and I thought I was getting information, and I found this thing on anatomy of a buyout attempt that came from Murfreesboro Electric, and I thought, man, this may be some great information, and the council never saw this. And when I read through it, it's like that we were fighting against ourselves, which is not the case. So what I want y'all to know is whatever decision we make tonight, we need to finalize this and move forward. We've got things that need to happen at Murfreesboro Electric if we don't make this decision, and we've got things that need to happen as a city if we do make this decision. So I want to hear from council members on what we need to do or where you stand on this, and then the process that we can put in place on if this decision passes, that we're going to have to talk about capital improvement or how we're going to set this up, or if it's something that we don't want to do, we're going to have to talk about capital improvement and how we're going to fund some of the things that we need to do inside of our city. And I'll get into later on some of the capital improvement at MED, but that's a discussion we also need to take into place. So with that, thank you for indulging me and letting me read through that process. I wanted to make sure for the record that we at least, people who will watch this later on, know how we got here and why we're discussing that. We're discussing this option. So the floor is open.
So, Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask Mr. Tenlu to explain to the audience the relationship with MED and the city, how the money is spent for MED, and how much money the city gets from MED each year?
Sure. The MED is run essentially as an enterprise fund, so any revenues that they receive are used to support their operations. The city doesn't receive any of those enterprise funds from any of the other utilities. The exception for our electric department is under the TVA contract, we're allowed to collect a tax equivalent payment. And that's calculated based on the depreciated assets of the utility, and, portion of the revenue of the utility. And it's intended to offset some of the property taxes that would otherwise be paid if the electric utility was in private hands. In the past, last year it was around $3 million a year. I think it's right around $3 million a year. That's all that we received from Middle Tennessee into the general fund. Of course, it receives revenues and operates itself. So it's not something that we can raise rates and then the money would flow to the city. It doesn't work that way. It's used, the revenue is used solely to operate the electric system, and the city operates in its operating, its general fund operation separately from that.
Okay. So if MED makes $50 million next year, we will not touch that $50 million?
No, we wouldn't do that. Okay. Now, the opposite of that is, because it is an enterprise fund and a department of the city, if it were for some reason, if any of the utilities that we operate were, even as an enterprise fund, if they were to lose money or need money, then we would have to fund those operations to make sure the services stay in effect. But no, we don't take money out of the enterprise fund.
Thank you.
And I think to follow up on what Kirk's saying, PD, I'm going to ask you to come to the lectern up there and tell us if we were to keep Murfreesboro Electric what your assets are at this point and what would be the potential of what expenses are you going to incur with the amount of money that you've accumulated, and do you have plenty of money? I mean, I heard the term cash cow the other day referring to our electric department. What is the status of our electric department today?
Well, I'm happy to address that, Mayor and Council. I mean, we're certainly not a – I've heard cash cow thrown around a little myself. I'm not sure what they mean by that, but as Mr. Tindall said, the only money that's transferred from the electric department to the city is our in lieu of tax payment, which is around $3.32 million. We're a not-for-profit. We're an enterprise fund of the city. Our rates are set to operate the utility efficiently, but we operate at lowest possible cost. We roll the money that we do, the net income that we do have, we roll it back into the system. Generally, we're adding, $15, $20 million worth of plant to the system on an annual basis. So we are financially strong, very low debt. We have adequate reserves in the system, but we have a lot of things going forward. As some people noted earlier tonight, the industry's changing a lot, and we're going to be facing a lot of challenges going forward. It's probably changed more in the last 15 years than it did the previous 70 or 80, and the next 10 or so are going to be just as fast paced. We've got a lot of things to that we wanted to do. If we remain Murfreesboro Electric, we want to develop a control center, a 24-hour call center that we currently have not had the staff to do. So we would have to staff up and do a number of those things that that possibly are already available in Middle Tennessee Electric. Day one, we've run out of space in our current location. We were actively looking at land to build a new campus. That cost estimated somewhere around $50 million. If the city does decide to leave us intact, that's an expense we'll incur. We looked at some capital costs over the next 5-10 years, and those numbers are going to run close to probably $100 million of investment that we would have to make. Would probably require.
Councilman Smotherman is going with this, because we had talked about this. We talk about the asset, about how much the asset's worth, but really something that over the last 4 years and really having this discussion has put us a little behind on spending and on our capital expenditures. So when you're looking at a $300 million asset, the number you gave me, and I want council to understand this because I think this is something that we need to discuss. When you borrow money, whose name is that money in?
City of Murfreesboro.
So the number that Mr. Monick gave me is that we're looking at roughly $100 million in that we're going to need to expend to get us to where Middle Tennessee Electric is right now.
That's correct.
So if we say that we have $40 million in cash right now, but we don't want to use all of that cash, that means over the next several years we're going to have to borrow $75 million. Is that fair?
That's a fair statement.
And the thing I think that is important in the number that he gave with that is that also has annual recurring costs of $3.85 million that go with that investment, plus the debt service, which on $70 million would be $6 million. So you're really looking at another $10 million a year in additional costs in the budget you don't have right now, correct?
That's correct.
So how do you fund that additional $10 million that would hit your operating budget?
Well, of course, we do cost of service studies constantly to determine if our rates are adequate to meet our needs, so we would continue to monitor that. If it required and rates to go up, then we would actually initiate a local rate of adjustment.
But and that's my point, that I think if you've got $10 million in where we are, $10 million that you would be spending, even if you cut that down to $5 or $6 million, and you guys cut some things out, would it be safe to say you would have to raise rates to be able to adjust for that money?
At the lower number, possibly no, but we'd be right on the crust of needing to.
And as kind of a follow-up question, just kind of to tag along with that discussion, but isn't it true also that TVA has passed on two rate increases to our distributor, and we've not passed those to clients, which means we could have used that income to pay debt service on capital improvements, but we've deferred it?
We did absorb two wholesale increases over the past 5 or 6 years.
Thank you.
Good.
Does the TVA determine or make a recommendation on how much money you can accumulate? I mean, so I know you've passed it on as far as not raising the rate, but does the TVA have any concerns at all with you accumulating money when that does occur?
TVA, of course, we've talked about, they function as our regulatory and compliance agency. They do monitor our cash. They monitor our rates. They have to approve our rates. They have a range of cash ratios that we need to stay within. If we've got too little, we need to raise rates. And if we have too much, they would want us to expect us to lower rates.
Right, because you're a not-for-profit.
That's correct.
And it's our understanding that Middle Tennessee Electric is also a not-for-profit, correct?
That would be correct, too.
And their rates are also determined by the TVA.
Yes, sir.
While I got you up here, I hope this is fair, but I think it's important for us to know, and certainly for the public to know, whatever the answer to this question is. You know, I mean, we've had people who've come from, I don't know how much they know about this internal situation, you know, the specifics of here in Murfreesboro, but is it, can you give me a general feel? I think I know what my general feel is, but if you don't think you want to speak for the employees as a whole, I'll take that answer and I'll just go on my general feel. But is there a feeling that you get from the employees as a whole of whether or not this is something that, and I don't mean, you know, hey, every single one of them either hates it or every one of them single one of them loves it, but can you give us some indication of kind of where the employees are, what your feel of where the employees are with this?
I can. Of course, obviously, I can't speak for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of our employees are excited about this opportunity coming together by creating the large organization. There's a lot of opportunities that get created. And, the combined staffs have a lot of talent on both sides. And coming together would afford us the opportunity to do a lot of things going forward. Economy of scale and synergies that would exist from combining the resources.
It would be safe to say generally positive. I'm not saying every single person, but generally positive would be at least a fair statement, do you think?
I would say so.
Okay.
And I'll just add a comment, too. PD, I know this has been tough. The mayor said it earlier, but I know it's been tough on you and all the staff, but also the employees of MED. So I appreciate how hard that has been, and I'm sorry it has been that way. But as we talk about, you can't. It's very difficult when you're talking about a negotiation to move things on a balance sheet when you're trying to negotiate, you know, price and things like that. So I am sorry. I do have one other question. It may not be a fair question since Rick's asking unfair questions. I'm asking unfair questions. I do think it's important to talk about when and where appropriate, sort of the apples to apples of when we talk about future capital improvements that MED would need to make, because I think that's a really good point of this conversation. But when we're talking about in comparison to Middle Tennessee Electric and where their capital costs are and where they are currently based on maybe some of the smart grid stuff that's been invested and some of the stuff that I don't even know what I'm talking about, the center that you have there, what's the appropriate term for that?
Tech center, the control center?
Yeah, the control center. My understanding is part of those are needs as well as the future home site, you know, new construction, new building. But I do think it's fair to compare, if we're talking about future capital improvements, to talk about our debt position versus another utility's debt position and based on what we're comparing. That's really, I guess, just a statement. Do I have a question in there?
I was waiting for the question.
I think I'm okay with it just being a statement. I'm good with that, yeah.
It's
As I think out loud, sorry. Yeah.
Most fair question I've ever heard.
Yeah. There you go. You don't have to answer anything. I'm sorry it's been hard, but I appreciate what you've done.
I thought it was fair. I didn't have to answer it.
I feel like a portion of tonight that, you know, we've all just might as well just give a group hug, but I want to – you have handled this very well. I'm not going to get into the past, but I think if the discussion that we've had now we could have had 5 years ago, we may not be here today. So I want to commend you and your staff on being open, even open to talk about whether this is good for not only the resident, but is this good for the employee? So I've not publicly said that to you, but I want you to know, I think as a council, how much we appreciate that you've been open to at least even discuss this. So,
thank you, Mayor. We've, unlike 4 years ago, this time we have had very good collaborative conversations between the two companies. I've enjoyed working with Chris and getting to know him a lot better and their staff, and we have been meeting and having collaborative discussions to discuss what would happen post-merger as part of our diligence moving forward on this. And the employees are first and foremost in those discussions, is to, we want to make sure that they're cared for, and they've been very generous to ensure that everybody would have a job, making at least as much money as they make today. And comment one of my colleagues made earlier that this was only an offer was good for 1 year. That's incorrect. I think Mr. Gillespie said earlier that they were only offered jobs for 1 year. And that's not true.
All right, council members.
I have a question for Chris. Could you answer this for me? We talked about the $3 million that we pay and that MED pays in lieu of taxes. What do you pay local government? Property taxes?
Yes, sir, we do. We pay what are referred to as ad valorem or property in lieu of property taxes. So we would pay the same equivalent approximately amount that MED does on the from a property tax perspective in the city. We don't right now, but we would in this coming together.
So the income stream of $3 million is approximately the same?
It would be less because there's another tax equivalent payment that MED pays as a result of the state law that was referred to by Craig a while ago. So it would be less. It would only be the property tax piece.
So has there been some estimate as to what that figure is?
That would be just over a million, I believe. That's right.
1.8?
That was approximate estimate. Using the asset value that they have now, a lot of the assets, particularly the real estate, hasn't been valued by our assessor because it had to be. It's municipal property, but just taking the asset, personal property assets that we carry on the books, and using that in a general way for the ad valorem tax, it's probably about 1.8.
Okay. A couple of other questions related that were brought up in the public hearing. I just want to make some clarifications because someone had said that there's a one-year employment guarantee for MED folks. Has that – I didn't see anything in the documents that I've been reading.
No, sir. That's not the case. I'm not sure what that refers to, but the intent of our coming together would be to bring the teams together, and we're going to need every team member to be successful. So we've talked about, I think PD mentioned it, Craig may have mentioned it, we're talking about coming together with everyone who wants to come and be part of the organization. We'll have that opportunity at no less than what they make now. And again, the positions, there'll be so little difference in this coming together. And we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, how that the team members at MED will be very likely doing the same thing they're doing on today on day one, so we see very little difference in that.
Okay. Another question is a 5-year rate transition plan.
Yes, sir.
Is that something that's being considered?
Yes, that's correct. Now, that as part of the process, we've talked about how the TVA would review this from a regulatory standpoint. So if we're successful with that, an outworking of that process is the TVA will give us 5 years and we'll have a plan to bring the rate structures together. So right now, our rate structures are very similar. So if you look at the entire rate packages from a distance, both of them, they look very similar. But we package them slightly differently. So, and I think we talked about last time a couple of weeks ago that we can't charge different rates within the business, within the utility. So ultimately, we have to get to a point where the rates are exactly the same. So it would just take time to do that. But again, we're not talking about a bill impact with regard to that. And it was mentioned a while ago with regard to residential rates. If you look at our residential rates right now, depending on what season you're in or how much you use, you could save money if you're on MTMC's rates or MED's rates, depending on the situation. But our rates are very, very similar. And we'll work with we'll work together, of course, with, like PD mentioned, a cost of service study to put those rates together in a fair way, not for profit way. So customers, members will see very, very little difference over that time period.
The comment was made tonight that our commercial customers were going to be paying a lot more. Is that the case?
Well, when you look at the different categories of rates, again, there are some that are a little less and some a little more as they stand right now. For example, our small commercial rates are less for Middle Tennessee Electric as compared to MED, but on the large commercial side, ours is a little bit more compared to MED. Again, as we bring those rate structures together, and again, we enjoy some of those synergies and efficiencies, we do cost of service studies. Over time, we bring those rates together, we'll make them very close. Again, we could realize some savings as a result of that. So, but the process of folding rates together would be make sure that at the end of 5 years, the rates are the same for everybody within a category, if that makes sense.
But, I mean, when TVA evaluates this, if they see that, you know, a large portion, 54% of our revenue from a utility is from our commercial customers, who, by the way, don't get a vote. So if PVA looks at that and sees that they're going to be paying a lot more money, which in turn goes back to all of us and the goods and services that we buy, I assume that would be something they would look at and say, no, that can't happen.
What TVA, and of course I can't speak for TVA, but what we understand from TVA, what they'll be examining in the regulatory process, they'll be focused primarily on rate impact and then on net material benefit. And how do those two components look in comparison to both systems and their ratepayers? And they'll make sure that there's not, excuse me, a negative rate impact going forward. And we will have to demonstrate that we have significant, sufficient net material benefit in the systems coming together. And we feel very confident that we can demonstrate that.
Okay, one more question. I want to compliment everybody for all the work. That one of the things that a public looks at this and they think, well, you're just giving it a flippant kind of concern. My colleagues and the staff and everybody are dissecting this frog to figure out what are the details in it. And we have gotten, 2 days ago, the point on the pencil. We got substantial documents for what the deal represents. And I've gone through some of them, and I just want to clarify some of the points that I think were made by some of the people from other parts. This transfer of assets in the deal is, I see nothing, I mean, it says all the property, the assets, the rights owned by, it's a direct transfer of the assets, and it has excluded some assets, which is the property where the building presently is and the storage area that you're going to occupy for 3 years. It does, I mean, the payment of that, the initial payment, I mean, all those assets go to to Middle Tennessee, and then you're making a payment, right? So the question about the assets following the ratepayers, am I clear to understand that the assets in the transfer of the sale actually go with the ratepayers? Is that, I mean, that's the way I'm reading the deal. Is it that all the assets, the reserves, and all transfer to the ratepayers, and then a payment is made? Is that?
Yes, if I'm understanding your question correctly, Mr. Shackler, that is correct. The assets would go to the cooperative. All the customers of Murfreesboro Electric become members of the cooperative, and those assets would seek to serve those same customers. Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's the case that's going to be made with TVA, and they'll evaluate the efficacy of that
Yes, and again, they'll make sure that there's no negative rate impact, and they'll make sure that we can demonstrate net material benefit.
That's right. Yeah, I want to make just one point. We talked about the asset a lot. I mean, we've talked about what it's worth, but you know, when you boil it down to a profit and loss, I mean, and you look at it from a city standpoint, I mean, ultimately we get $3 million a year with the new tax increase is what we get from Murfreesboro Electric. And then we get one point, just round up, we get $2 million a year from Middle Tennessee Electric, $1.8, $2 million. So, you know, really what we're talking about is over a 30-year period. If you just say there's a $1 million difference, we're talking about over a 30-year period, we're talking about there's a $30 million difference in the revenue that we get from Murfreesboro Electric and Middle Tennessee Electric. So we're giving up that revenue. But at the same time, and one of the things that just hit me like a ton of bricks when I finally got this information, we're giving up the revenue, but we're giving up liability as well, because we're either going to have to borrow money under the city of Murfreesboro for capital improvement projects and take that aside, or we're going to be borrowing money under Murfreesboro Electric to be able to, you know, build the things that we need to build with Murfreesboro Electric. So, you know, dollars and cents, regardless of whether it's a revenue bond by the ratepayers, it's still on the books of the city of Murfreesboro. And, you know, I talked with a gentleman from Tullahoma after the meeting who said, well, you know, y'all could put it into an authority like we did. But from the same standpoint, is why in the world will we take an asset and give that asset away and give up control on how that asset's going to be done in the future, which is, that makes no sense to me. Perfectly may work great in Tullahoma. I wouldn't want to do that in Murfreesboro. Again, looking at where we are. So that's how I've sort of broken it down, is here's what we're giving up revenue-wise, but here's what we're also giving up that we may have to borrow. A lot of the things that – so new headquarters and land are some of the things. Where are you guys going to be with your headquarters, or what's the timeline you see on that?
Yes, sir. So we have said from, 5 years ago, when we purchased that property on Veterans Parkway, that we're seeking to build a new corporate headquarters there. And that's still an option that's on the table. But if we're successful in this coming together, we have a lot more options to talk about. And so we want to keep all those options open. And so, again, with the added capabilities we're talking about here, the proximity changes as well. You know, where we are on 555 New Salem Road right now, you know, that's our corporate headquarters today. And we're looking to, when we were Middle Tennessee Electric, and just thinking from that perspective of building out a Veterans Parkway in the future. But one reason we were talking about that was because we were getting further and further away from our members, whether it's traffic or just, you know, the growth. But now if we come together, you know, that equation changes. And so we'll want to reevaluate working with our team members from MED if we come together and think about what the options are. So we may go a different course. It's good, and I like having options. It's good to have options. So that's still on the timeline, still on the timetable as a possibility, but it's not definitive as yet. So we want to keep those options open.
I think it's important that we look at this in three different sections of whether or not it's good for Murfreesboro, the taxpayers, is it good for the ratepayers, and is it good for our employees that we currently have with MED. Gina, could I ask you to come up and make a comment? And I hate asking you to do this because I gave you no preparation whatsoever to prepare for this, but I want your honest opinion.
Yes, sir.
You've seen the contracts that are being passed around, I'm assuming, and what's going into.
Mr. Schmidt, let's qualify what, for the people who are watching, no pressure, Gina, what Gina does for Murfreesboro Electric. I think it'd be good to let people know what your role with MED is.
Director of Human Resources.
Thank you, Gina. And I should have pointed that out as well. And that's why I called on you, because I think you have the most direct pulse of how the employees feel the direction they would like to see this transaction go. I also think you have the most direct feel of what benefits they're currently provided and what benefits would they receive if this transaction were to take place. Would you please expand our knowledge of what your vision of is what would happen here and what the opinion of the current employees are, because they are a very dedicated workforce. They're a phenomenal workforce, and in my time on the power board, I can say I do nothing but appreciate what they do and the danger and risk that they take in what they do. They do a phenomenal job. But would you expand on those?
Yes, sir, and as PD said earlier, I certainly don't want to speak for all employees.
Right.
They have been through a long, almost 5 years. I started consulting with them right after this happened the last time. And it has been a toll on employees. And some that were not for it before, the majority are for it now, just because they're ready for the next step. And I know Shane mentioned earlier, Mayor, that this might be it if you vote no, but I don't know if there's another council in 3 more years or 4 more years, it may come up again. And as PD said earlier, and I think Mr. Jones as well, it's been different this time around. We've kind of had a seat at the table, and we've gotten to know our counterparts at Middle Tennessee Electric. And it's really helped a lot, because I've helped with other mergers at other companies, and a lot of times it does just come out and you don't know about it. You really don't get to prepare for it. And it's helped this time because we've gotten to prepare. And I've gotten to have discussions with Gray Bateman. Daphne and I have met with him several times. We're looking at the benefits. We're doing side by side. And I have never had a company offer the benefits to employees and the guarantees that Middle Tennessee Electric has offered. And I think that's one of the reasons why employees are so excited. I know our board, Rick Lance is on our board, they gave a pay increase for employees. And yesterday when I walked around after we announced that we got a pay increase, employees weren't jumping up and down. And I said, why are you all excited? We just got a pay increase. And they said, we're worried about the meeting Thursday night. I said, why are you worried? And this was some of our customer service representatives. They said, we really want it to go through, and we're afraid it's not. I said, why are you excited about it? And they said, we see it as an opportunity. One of them said they wanted to actually work in Franklin, and they knew Murfreesboro Electric was not going to have a Franklin office, but Middle Tennessee Electric does.
Right.
They see it as advancement. So, and again, we've looked at benefits. We don't have all the answers on the benefits, but I have never had a company offer the guarantees and the opportunities that they have.
Yeah,
and employees see that.
Thank you, Gene. I know we had the meeting the other night in the rotunda here, and I can't tell you how many employees came up to me and said, Mr. Smotherman, the best Christmas present you could give us would be turning us over to Middle Tennessee Electric. And I think that meant volumes of where they are psychologically, physically, about what has gone on for the last 5 years. Thank you.
That would be correct. They just would like to have an answer.
Right.
Thank you, Gina. Councilman.
Yep. Martin. It's okay if I go next, Vice Mayor, or are you?
No, I was just going to ask why she's going to
fail. Okay, Gina, come. Sorry. Vice Mayor.
About how many in the last, let's say, 2 years, about what percentage of employees have left Middle Tennessee?
Murfreesboro,
I'm sorry. I was looking at Chris and said that. Sorry.
We have had more turnover in the last few years. We've had actually several employees retire. A lot of it is because they were ready, but some of them and even some of our younger employees have said that that's been part of their decision, is because of the not knowing.
And also, do you think it may be a fair statement also to say that a lot of them left are very uneasy today because there was a freeze put on hiring?
I would say some. Yes, we're concerned that we didn't maybe have the manpower to do a lot of the things that we needed to do.
Thank you. Thank you, Alderman. I was just going to ask, speaking of putting a freeze on hiring, why did we put a freeze on hiring at Middle Tennessee, I mean at Murfreesboro? I'm not talking to you. I'm sorry. I said thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
It's non-critical only, right?
Right. We didn't put a freeze on hiring. We did allow critical positions to go forward. But as in any type of merger situation, at some point in time, you have to slow things down in order to catch that moving train. And that's one of the processes that's quite typical in a merger situation.
Councilman Martin.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that based on Shane's commitment that we'd all hug afterwards, everybody will hug me after I make some of these comments that I'm going to make. But
well, I'm a mover.
Yeah. But so I have several questions. I have many questions I think that would be good for us to get on the record. So I'm going to ask them so we can get them on the record because I think that's good. I think one of the things that is healthy for us is for us to be able to have healthy discussion and disagreement about things. And so I'm going to present what I think is a dissenting opinion on whether or not we should be doing this. And the great thing about this is that if the council votes to approve the merger, we know our city is in good hands and Middle Tennessee Electric can take great care of it. But I've shared this concern with Mr. Tindall that I was not necessarily pleased with all of the information I received in a briefing. I didn't feel like it was complete, Craig, just from my perspective, and Craig shared his views on that, and I certainly respect what he's trying to do and council's wishes to do the best he can to support his recommendation. But I guess I'd like to start to make sure I don't what for me is being a new council member, what's different about this discussion today than when we had it in 15 that I may not be aware of? So what in council's mind is different about that today? I know you've talked about that a little bit, Shane, but I'd really like to know because I haven't heard a lot of this. This is why it's different today.
Well, I'll speak from being on the power board at the time, and I think Ms. Dix really summed this up. I'm not going to go into personalities.
I'm going to do a little bit of that, but you go ahead.
Yeah. I will say from the time that this discussion, it probably was not handled the best in the world on making sure that, you know, it was communicated correctly. But I think having a seat at the table has been what's been a lot different. I will say from a council standpoint, you know, we make policy. Staff gives recommendations to us, and we determine, just like this, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Sure.
In that case, 4 years ago, I think you had people who were not responsible for making policy who really crossed the line into what they felt like policy-wise was the best decision. And so the council, or for that matter, the power board, never really had the opportunity to say whether it was a good deal or a bad deal because there was so much clutter that was going on behind the scenes. So I think that's why it's been different.
I would second that. I mean, you know, the why is it different for me would be, you know, of course, I was a new council member at the time.
Right.
Was, you know, you couldn't even have an open mind. You couldn't even have an open, you know, well, let me learn about this because it was so cluttered. I mean, there was no discussion other than all the fray. There was no discussion at the council level that was meaningful.
Well, and I think it really, you know, I prefaced this, and I was joking about saying this anatomy of a buyout attempt. Mm-hmm. I think what's different about where we are now, no matter how much that we could talk, there was no team at all on making a good decision. It was this, our minds made up, we don't want this to happen, and everything behind the scenes went to make sure that that didn't happen. And so, you know, I read this thing, and it's like that we were the enemy to our own people, our own electric department, and that was not the intent nor the case. And so I think that probably is just personalities, and I think people are – PD, I can say from my standpoint, I'm definitely older and like to think that I'm wiser, but I definitely think that you look at the people that are sitting next to each other, and one of the reasons that we're having this discussion is because the discussion was allowed to take place.
And I'll say that the significant difference from me being here at that time was, at that time, it was presented as much more of a hostile takeover than it was a merger. And although we're receiving money for it, there is certainly an environment that's taking place in this transaction that would be more of a merger where everyone benefits. When the last presentation was given to us, it was basically even the rates were being manipulated in order to say we're less than they are. And so there was a lot of undermining that went on from the department head. And at that time, I mean, and I stood beside the employees and I said, I will stick with you and I will defend you as best I can as a council member. But the attitude of the employees, based on the information they were being given from the top, was this is a hostile takeover. And I don't feel that at all now from the top to the lineman when I talk to him out here on the side of the street now. It's more of a, this will be a merger between two very good utility services that will be beneficial to everyone in every phase of what is about to take place if it were to come to fruition. And that is a significant different atmosphere than what it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Ronnie, knowing you and the thing I appreciate, you always are trying to look at the information and the analytics of you would have beat your head on the table if you had been here 4 years ago. And at the time, you know, Richard, I think Richard Stone, he was on the power board. I mean, it was really a discussion within the power board that the power board in a power board meeting is saying, hey, let's let this process take place. Let's go through. The power board is going to be neutral. We're going to talk about what may be best for the utility and what may be best for the city. And then the next thing, there's a press release or something going out on why MED's against this. And we're like, how the heck did that happen? So I think the difference in what you're seeing now is probably smarter, wiser, in making sure that it was handled a little differently when these discussions happen.
But I guess the other point to that is there are not necessarily merits of the deal that are better today than they were then.
You know, we never got that far.
Okay.
I mean, we never even got to – we had an original MOU that basically said this is the bottom of what the utility would be worth, but we want to go through the process with the power board to do the evaluation, to look at the synergies, to talk about what's better for the employees. And honestly, it was once that was even talked about, it was come out all guns blazing, and we never even got to have the conversation like we're having now.
So I think I appreciate that because it's helpful to me because, you know, I've read that as well and the document and, you know, as a council member, that was very disturbing to me to hear that internally we were trying to sabotage something that might be the will of the council. So that concerns me. And what I, you know, I probably feel less passionate about the sale of MED than I do more passionate about making sure that I feel like the process is done as open as it can possibly be. And so, you know, I struggle with a little bit of that. Maybe that's me being a new council member and not understanding the way some of this works. But I will say my preference would have been for us to be probably having this discussion in January or February rather than December, and may have maybe had this discussion once a month for 12 months because I think it's really important. There are a lot of things that have come up today that I'm going to try to be as fast as I can to get through them because I don't want to slow us down. But, you know, for one, off the top of my head, the referendum discussion. I think Adam Tucker's given a very good legal opinion about that. We've talked about it. I know that there are people that feel like in the community that there should be a vote on that. But I'm very satisfied with the opinion that Adam has given that, you know, we're a representative democracy and we are limited to the powers that we have based on our charter. And we don't have the power to give voters the ability to do that. And, Mr. Tucker, I'm not an attorney, so fix what I messed up about that. But
Very good, Padawan.
But I think that's important for people to know. We're not just ignoring the fact that there's some discussion that there should be a referendum. We're operating within the confines of what we're supposed to do. And so that's one of those things that I think is...
Councilman Martin, we also have an outside legal opinion, correct? So it's not just from the inside attorney.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And I got one more quick question, then I'm going to make some more of these... no answer, philosophical comments, and I'll try to be brief. But one thing, if we do approve the sale and this is taken to TVA and TVA says yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, or tweak this, does that decision come back to us at that particular point to weigh the merits on that, or does staff have the ability to do that themselves?
No, if TVA and you know, I don't know the exacting process, but if something like that were to occur, we'd have to bring it back to council.
Okay.
That were to change the deal, yeah, it would come back.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go to my dissenting opinion here, if you'll be patient with me. But
well, since you said TVA, can I ask you one question?
Yes, ma'am. I'll defer to you all the time.
Stop it.
The gentle lady from Murfreesboro, you now have the floor.
Don't take my thoughts from me, guys. So, if it's approved, then it goes to TVA to tweak it. Or, what exactly would TVA be doing?
There's the TVA has issued guidelines, and they've provided a template for the application that we'd make to them, and that would be completed, and it would go to the TVA for them to do their analysis. And they may ask for a lot more information, you know, along the lines of rates, and we'd provide all that to them so they can do all their analysis.
Well, if that's the case, why don't we do our proposal to TVA first?
They won't accept it. It has to go through our body, and it has to go through the Middle Tennessee Electric's board before we can present it to TVA.
So let's say that we vote on it tonight, it goes to TVA, and they kind of give us a no on some things. So then it comes back, and then there's no deal. Right.
Well, yes, that's true. Because TVA has to approve our assignment of the power purchase contract, and it's the only way we get electricity, because they generate electricity, we just distribute it. So if they didn't approve the transfer of that contract, we wouldn't really have anything to transfer.
So the process, we would vote on it, Middle Tennessee Electric would vote, their board would vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
Then if both of those agree, then it has to go to TVA.
Right.
TVA will do what they told us yesterday on this call, that they're going to evaluate the financial parameters of the deal and look at how that, what the benefits and how that affects the ratepayer.
Right.
And then if they pass that, then I assume it would come back to us to be able to, we would be notified that TVA has approved the deal, and then that's when the clock starts moving on a closing.
Yeah, then we'd close on the property.
But if TVA comes back and says, we don't think this is the best benefit of the ratepayer, nor is this the best use of the system, then that's the deal's over with then, correct?
If they didn't approve it, yes. And maybe Chris has a little more experience with how they respond to that. I don't know if they come back and say yes, no, if they come back and say we like it except for these parameters, and then we would bring it back to council to discuss those. I'm not too certain. Maybe Chris can.
So I would say not sure, but I think likely that as we – and this will be, by the way, a joint – response from Middle Tennessee Electric and Murfreesboro Electric that we provide to TVA. So we jointly prepare that based on the guidelines Craig referred to earlier. So they'll have that. They may initiate dialogue with clarifications on certain pieces, but I think at the end of the day it will be a yes or no. And we can expect about a three-month, they told us to expect about a three-month review.
Is that review done by TVA staff, or is that a TVA board approval?
That's TVA staff. This is not a TVA board action, as I understand it.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I've got some more, but not specifically for Mr. Jones. Sorry. Thank you. So one just general comment, too. I think, for me personally, I think we've missed an opportunity to really leverage, if in fact we do sell the utility. I think we've missed an opportunity to try to fix some of these things that were going on that maybe we couldn't fix them. I wasn't here, so it's real easy to armchair quarterback that stuff. I realize that. But I do think once the utility is sold, obviously we're likely not to ever have another one. And so whatever opportunities that could have existed by fixing some of those leadership issues, I think we've missed that. And I think that's a failure, not just – I mean, that's our failure, I think. And I'm not blaming that on anyone in particular, but I do think that any time a culture goes bad, you kind of have to look at the top. And so that rests with us. I mean, it just has to.
Can I make just one comment?
Yeah, of course, just a general statement.
We didn't have control over that.
And that may be what we're talking about with how we changed. So
in 2015 – The MED was set up to where the city manager actually made the appointment of the council member that served on that. It was not a mayor appointment. I ended up getting on the power board as mayor because two council members wanted to be on the power board, and so the city manager at the time said, I'm going to pick the mayor to go on there because two council members can't get mad for the mayor going on there. So I went on the board. But the way that the MED was set up at that time, and Mr. Stone's here is a power board member. If I'm wrong on this, please correct me. The city of Murfreesboro had no say really whatsoever on how the decisions were made inside the realm of the power company. The general manager reported to the power board. The city council had no say on the hiring or firing of the general manager. The city manager had no discretion. The only thing that had to happen is the MED would present us a budget every year. Mm-hmm. Now, we changed that when we saw that happen in 2015, and we did see that culture, and we learned from what happened in 2015. We said, this is not healthy. So we did change that in 2017 to make the power board still give them over budget some of the things, but we made that to where that board was more of an advisory board. So the council was able to have those discussions. So that's why that happened.
I didn't have that background, obviously, yeah. So I appreciate that. So two, a couple kind of big things for me. One of the things we've talked about as why I think this makes sense is the small system that we have. And as I've dug into what a small system means, and Mr. Tindall and I had some of this conversation today, so I wanted to know, what does that really mean? And so I went out and kind of dug into some of this information because part of what I think we're talking about is, as a small system, as you've got fixed cost infrastructure that you have to maintain, that you have to improve, the smaller system you are, the more demands are on maintaining the expense of that infrastructure. Well, what was really interesting to me is, and these are things that I think should have been in our briefing book, I think were important from a decision-making process. So there are, 928 cooperatives in our country. Middle Tennessee Electric is third from a ranking standpoint. And so, back to if this deal goes through, we're in great hands. There's no question about that. What's really interesting to me is that MED in the space of municipal systems, there are about twice as many municipal systems as there are cooperatives. Well, we're the 50th largest municipal system in the country. So we're not a small utility in any circumstances. And if you even use the median of those 1,900 systems, the median is Carroll County. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. The median is I got so many notes on here. I said that, but okay, so the median in Tennessee, so we're seventh largest system in Tennessee out of 61 with 67,000 accounts. So the median in Tennessee is Carroll County or Huntington based on number of accounts, which is about 15,000 accounts. But what was really interesting to me is there are 20 systems in Tennessee that are under 10,000 accounts. And so we have six times that number. And so, so expand that out to the, nationwide, 82% of municipal systems in the country are smaller than MED. 82% of them are smaller than we are. And so one of the things I struggle with as, again, as a new council member that's using information to make a decision, if I'm saying, well, part of this basis is we're a small system and there's a threat to revenue as we're growing and we've got this heavy expense side, and so I believe we're a small system, well, we're bigger than 82% of the municipal systems in the country. And, you know, so that was hard for me as I'm trying to make a decision about what we do long term. So I just make a comment, and Craig addressed that. I don't know if you want to speak to that or not, Mr. Tindall.
Yeah, I think the comment that I had made about was relative to the changes that the industry is facing, and that a larger utility system, because utilities are all about economies of scale, and that's just how rates are kept low because of the fixed costs that are involved. So relative to a very large entity, the costs that the industry is looking at in the future on some of the changes we talked about, smart grid, and there's distributive generation and a lot of things that will require significant investment or research and development or just money to be involved in those kind of fields, which impacts the utility's revenue stream, that larger rather than smaller is usually better because of the economies of scale.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The other thing, as we talk about the density of the system, because we talked about as the systems come together, you can spread those economy scales over the system. Well, another thing I'm having trouble with that I would love some help with is, you know, we appear to be rough math, 5 or 6 times as dense as the co-op. And so using that logic of density is better to spread over your fixed cost, how would we not be more in a much better position to deal with whatever changes come related to industry changes or whatever else if we have 5 or 6 times the density to spread? I'm just looking for an answer.
Well, I think from an economy scale standpoint, density is one measure, but, you know, there's also just the bare number. So while I think, and again, I'm going to have to defer to the experts on this, but from what I understand and what I learned right now, I think the concern about density would have made a substantial difference when we were talking about 1938 and running new lines and putting poles in and equipment and everything else. Middle Tennessee has electrical lines everywhere. So a lot of that investment is in there. It's been in there for a long period of time. So the economies of scale there are available, and they're there, even though, you know, it's not that dense. So I think that density helps. Density is important, just standpoint of spending money on gas to drive out there. But I think that over the decades that it's become a measure that's less important to rates than it was years ago. And again, I'd stand corrected if our industry experts had a different thought.
Mr. Jones?
Tell me where I was wrong.
Yeah, no, correct, yes, Mr. Martin. So the way I might like to characterize that to get started is that I mentioned before that when you look at our rate structures, our rates overall, our bills, our rates are very, very similar between Middle Tennessee Electric and Murfreesboro Electric. So, and as you mentioned, MED's density is far greater than Middle Tennessee Electric's density. So about 84, 85 customers per mile for MED, whereas it's about 19 for us. So MED serves about 50 square miles or so. We serve 2,100 square miles. So that's where the math comes from. And so the density, all things being equal, would suggest that MED's rate should be a lot lower than Middle Tennessee Electric's.
Right.
But, of course, that's not the case because we bring the economies of scale to the table. We have a lot bigger customer base to spread fixed costs across. So our rates are very, very similar because we have both great advantages. MED's great advantage is density. Our great advantage is economies of scale. Now, the beauty of this merger is how those two benefits come together to benefit the greater organization for time on end, because we bring those together. And so now If I may, Mr. Martin, to your question about resiliency in the face of industry changes, depending on which one you're talking about. Within our industry, we have a certain propensity for protectionism, if I may, for attempting to insulate. And so we, I think, as an industry, are struggling with the needs that we have in front of us to adapt to changing customer expectations, technology, everything else. So if you were looking to maintain the asset to simply have rates as low as feasible to be, forgive me for saying it, but cheap, then that might be a benefit. But we don't need to be that way. Our utilities and the way we serve our members, the way we serve our customers, the way we serve the city of Murfreesboro needs to be characterized by innovation, and we need to be prepared to be able to answer the customer expectations that are out there, the questions that are coming, to be a trusted energy advisor for those we serve, to be the best utility we can. So we mentioned before that the things that I think the mayor mentioned where MED wants to go are places that we already are. Now, we need to do more. But we have, as the mayor characterized it, if you will, and if you can think of it this way, a $100 million capital investment head start on answering these situations. That comes in resources, that comes in technology and other pieces. So again, when you talk about the benefits of coming together from the standpoint of the city of Murfreesboro and its customers, we have, in coming together, you're able to leverage those investments we've already made to the benefit of the whole utility. So again, back to the start, the key benefit to this from a financial standpoint, in my estimation, is the density of MED plus the economies of scale of Middle Tennessee Electric, both good in their own right, coming together create an incredible recipe for success long term.
And thank you. Mr. Jones, I assume there's a benefit to the city, but clearly Middle Tennessee Electric wouldn't be making this deal if this was not a good deal for Middle Tennessee Electric as well. We're not trying to give our utility away, but I think the one thing that we have seen with talking with you guys, and that was the part that got me on the capital improvement plan, and I hadn't had it put this way, you guys do have a $100 million head start on where we need to be and the things that we need to go to do. And that's really one of the things that started this conversation is when I was on the power board and the other council members went on that, you know, we were talking about an MED building a $40 million headquarters. Originally, it was shown to be in the swamp on Malloy Lane, and PD saw that was not a good deal and sold that property. I think the discussions, Ronnie, that we're having with Rutherford County right now on can we be better having our EMS work together. So really what started this discussion is did it make sense for MED to build a $40 million or $50 million facility that's 2.5 miles away from where Middle Tennessee Electric is going to build a $100 million facility. And ultimately, you can say ratepayer all you want to, but the ratepayers on the west side of town who are served by Middle Tennessee Electric are paying for a $100 million facility, and the other residents who are in Murfreesboro are paying for a $50 million facility. So it's much like us building what we're building right now.
Yes, sir. And if I may, in large part, I think that's what reignited this conversation was coming to a realization about that as we began to talk together about our headquarters plans. And we saw that, you know, does it make sense to build two headquarters campuses so close together for the same purposes, in essence, as you just touched on? So I think that's what brought us back here. But from the standpoint of us, again, as you alluded to, the excitement that I have as a utility leader and honored to serve in the position I do, it comes back to me to being about how great we can be together as organizations. We're very good now. Both of us are. But we talk about the opportunity that's there in front of us to be, you know, world-class as utility, and that's there. And again, I don't believe that either of us can reach our potentials without the other. I don't think we can reach them separately. We'll still be good, but we can't be as great as we can be together. So I think we're better together.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
So one other just kind of general comment. I think it'd be good to get it on the record because I know it came up. I think it's important to talk about why Middle Tennessee Electric and why not someone else, why not an independent bidder or whatever else, because I know there have been questions about that that we've all seen. And I had a good conversation with Mr. Tindall today, and what I think was a really good explanation on that that we extracted from the briefing book, which was, there are challenges with having an outsider or someone other than Middle Tennessee Electric because of just the pure demographics of where we are. But the other piece of that is, even if someone were willing to pay more for that and we're trying to extract the absolute top dollar value, there's going to – that transaction in and of itself would create rate pressure for rate holders, which TVA obviously is very sensitive to. So there are a lot of these things I think they're very easy explanations for that people deserve to know the answers to those things, and we need to answer those things. So from my perspective, I felt very good about that, and I appreciated the insight. So I don't know if you want to speak to that specifically.
I'll tell you – let me just tell you this too, just because this goes to that. Personally, I don't know that I would have been very open to the discussion of doing this on a private basis. You can't say all the same things that we have said that I think are extremely important. And, it may – and I think you raise a great point from a standpoint of letting the public know this. But, the reason I'm saying this is because it's so important that this is a nonprofit. They get to vote. The members get to vote. All those things are extremely important. I don't know. I think if it's Duke Energy, for example, and I'm sorry to Duke Energy for singling them out, but if it's something like that, it's an investor-driven, shareholder-driven type of a utility, I'm probably pretty much out right away because of the impact that it has, not just necessarily on rates, but just the employees, all of the things that we've been talking about. I tell you that just for some introspect into how important that is, in my opinion.
Is the point that we did after studying some of this. There's not a privately owned electric company in TVA's jurisdiction, is there?
No, there's not. And the original federal act would make it difficult for an investor-owned utility probably to operate within the TVA system. And like you said, geographically speaking, we're about 50 square miles within, completely surrounded by 2,100 square miles. So the synergies you get from having two systems together doesn't exist except for Middle Tennessee Electric. The other thing is that Middle Tennessee Electric's been here 80 years. So when we talk about local control, they're going to be here. They've committed to be here. They've been here a long time. It retains that local control on top of being a nonprofit and members having votes and all the other things that Middle Tennessee Electric is able to bring that a bidder wouldn't.
Ronnie,
and I would could I if I would just add that we have Q&A questions and answers on our website. We've published links to that. We've put them out on Facebook. We've put a lot of this information in through different channels. And of course, we had our public information system. If people wanted to ask those kind of questions, it was certainly there. But that is addressed in that.
Yeah, and that wasn't a criticism at all. It was just I think people want to see it in this meeting, and so to the degree we can get it in this get it in this meeting, I think we should. So I appreciate that. I guess my last thing, and I'll stop talking, and I appreciate everyone indulging me, but I'm very also sensitive to the fact that this feels very much like, a bridge to short-term financing for the capital improvement project that we have. I understand the argument of trading assets. I think it's a fair argument to make. I would have a different look on that, and I would have a different look on it because we had to raise property taxes 34 cents this year in order to fund operations. I think it's really hard to know how exactly did that happen. We know property tax was a big piece of that, letting that lag and not adjusting the rate upwards. That was a part of it. But we still have questions related to development costs, rooftop costs, commercial costs, who should be paying what should impact fees be. And what I don't want is
for us to trade an asset that we have that I feel like, and I could certainly be wrong, that is a good long-term asset of the city, for streets and roads, which obviously are in demand, which obviously people want. And, you know, I'm not going to win any votes by saying, you know, I don't want to build your roads. That's really not what I'm saying. I just question the wisdom long-term of that decision, specifically because, especially, you know, Councilman Smothers mentioned this and we've talked about it, unless we put that money aside and we have a very responsible way to use, you know, our limitations on being able to do that, I would be totally for or against investing any kind of significant capital from this as a one-time deal or in a short-term deal. And the main basis for that is going to be that I think we're going to have, if we continue to grow, which I believe we will do, I've not seen anything to give me reason that we would not, we're always going to have capital improvement pressure. And for us to have had a backlog created of $750 million on the capital improvement plan, I think we need to be asking lots of questions about that. And that's a different discussion probably than MED. But what I don't want is for us to believe that that's a solution to that problem, because that's a long-term problem that we need to come up with a solution about. And, yes, we have some control over that. We can decide what goes into it. Mr. Tindall's mentioned that's a one-year-off deal. But we're also talking about selling this because of a five-year CIP plan that we're going to look at on an annual basis. I don't know that that makes me feel comfortable. So part of my opposition to this has nothing to do with Mills and City Electric. It has to do with financially how we run our house and to make sure that we leave it good for the future councils, good for future staff. And that's going to require some hard decisions. And, you know, I'm going to say this, and, you know, nobody's going to hug me for this either, but you know, if property values go up 5, 8, 10% next year, we need to hold our rate where it is. We do not need to let the rate fall. And nobody's going to like to hear that. But I believe that is part of what has caused this problem. And you know good and well, if we do this, if we make this decision, what's going to be said is you've got $250 million, now you don't have to raise taxes anymore or give us some of our tax money back. That can't happen. And I'm only one vote, and you know, I may not even be here again. So I'm just trying to do what's best long term. I know everybody else is trying to do the same thing, so I don't discount others that feel differently. I just want to get that on the record.
I'm gonna make a couple of comments, because I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of public thought process that might be similar to a couple of things that you're saying. And look, so you make the comment of, you know, there's a different problem out there,
right,
that we need to solve. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, I think all of us really, I think we all think that way, honestly. I mean, from the discussions that we've had over the last couple of years, when we really, you know, have started to make some of these changes. I mean, I take a little bit of, I would tell you, I take offense to this, isn't the right word, but, you know, I would rebut the idea that, you know, that the culture at MED is terribly broken and all that kind of stuff is horrible right now. You know, what I would tell you is, if it weren't for this discussion, I think it's improved substantially from where it was 4 or 5 years ago. The way that the control is from the city, I think, is more appropriate. There are those kinds of things. I rebut the idea that we haven't acknowledged already the fact that we got to make some changes. You know, part of the discussions we've had, I mean, we've got a water and sewer allocation or a sewer allocation density issue that we've just passed. Where, you know, I think, you know, part of the discussions we've had, we've all talked about things we can do to increase our property tax per capita. Those were words that were never used for the last 20 years. So when we start thinking about things differently, which I believe we really have. Now, look, man, it's one of, you know, the adage of turning a train. You know, I'm with it. It's hard to turn them. But I think, honestly, we're in the middle of pulling on the steering wheel with some of those things where we're trying to, you know, be more focused on property tax per capita, getting more. That you don't have to have a property tax increase if you get people that are paying more property taxes, right? So there's more revenue there and less people to serve.
which is a big train, too.
It's a big train, yeah. Right, man. So, I mean, look, these things are all things that have been discussed and we are trying to happen. We did this stuff in our retreat just, you know, weeks ago, a couple months ago. You know, I will tell you that the discussion about the CIP for me as it relates to this, I mean, I think the best way that I can say it is the CIP discussion as it relates to this transaction, it's a result of the transaction, not a reason for the transaction in my eyes. You know, look, if we go sell a piece of property that we own, are we going to not sell it because we got to figure out what to do with the money? I mean, no, we got to make the decision about what's the best decision to make, and then now we got to go out and figure out the best way to go spend the money. Right. Now, this is a much bigger decision, and honestly, man, I ask for people to give me more time to think on zoning issues, right? I mean, so I'm never going to be one to sit here and say, if somebody's got needs to think about this more, it'd be not appropriate for me to look at one of you guys and say, no, by God, we got to get this done yesterday, and that's just the way it's got to be, and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to make an argument. I don't want to be talking to you in terms of whether or not I think this is a good idea. But since bringing up the CIP, I'll give you my thoughts on that. Is just from a standpoint of, you know, it's a result, so we will have to, if we decide that this is a good thing to do, and the TVA says it's a good thing to do, we will have to make that decision. I'm also in favor of some way to put some money, you know, into the situation like Eddie brought up a few weeks ago. We've talked about this over the months that this has been going on. you know, I personally don't feel like it's got to necessarily all be there. I think there is a backlog, and have we had issues? Yeah, man, but I'm going to tell you right now, the backlog of CIP stuff, I don't know that it's fair to say it's a result of all the bad decisions that have been made in past councils. I'm not just talking about my 5 years here. You know, I'm talking about for a long time. You know, and in fairness, man, you know, we've all had opportunities to cut stuff out of a budget. You've been here for a budget cycle. We've all been here for several budget cycles. We've all had opportunities to cut them. Last year, you were present for the meetings because you were busting your butt working to get this job that you're dealing with right now. You know,
you asked for this.
Congratulations.
You know, you were there when we made a conscientious decision to reduce our general fund as opposed to borrowing money. What's the difference in that? I mean, you know, so what's the difference in that as selling a one-time asset to pay for operating expenses? Well, it's not, but you got to remember, we were borrowing $72 million, if my memory serves me correctly, and instead we only borrowed $68 million. So it wasn't operating expenses that we were paying with that one-time revenue. Mm-hmm. It was less debt. We just had to try to come to a – and so some of that, yeah, so it's maybe 62 and 58. Yeah, sorry, all right. So it was 60, but we reduced – no, I'm talking about 2 years ago.
Oh, that's 72.
Yeah, thank you, 2 years ago. So, yeah, I remember two full years. So, it, you know, look, there it's easy to sit back and just kind of say – I'm not saying you. I'm saying I've heard this from a lot of people. It's easy to sit back and say the whole problem is – we've been taking these one-time revenue streams and plugging them into our operating expenses. Man, if we had done that actual thing for the last 10 years where we're taking $10 million worth of property sales out there on the gateway, we're not fixing a $4 million budget issue. We're fixing a $100 million operating budget, you know, when it catches up to you. Right, so we've used a lot of that money to go towards one-time projects. Some of those projects have tail cost. So I hope you understand where I'm getting at on that. You know, it's not quite as simple as just saying that. Now, how does that relate to all this? And I'm going to circle back. But since you brought that up, it's important that we all get an understanding of where we sit on this. I view this as, we got to figure out if it's the right thing. I think the mayor said it very well. I haven't heard that way as far as, you know, the way that we need to make this decision. But I think it's a good way to look at it. And as you notice, I'm not sitting here making an argument for it. I'm not making an argument against it. I'm just trying to talk about the process a little bit and what we really, where I think we need to have a little bit of focus. The people who say this is just about the money, okay? I can tell you, I'm sorry that they feel that way. I don't even know the right word, but for somebody to come here from Tullahoma and tell me that it's just about the money and what I ought to do with the money is stupid. I mean, I just tell you, there's nothing about that that they've never talked to me. They have no idea what's in my mind. And, you know, for somebody from Murfreesboro to say it's just about the money because we had a tax increase, well, why were we talking about it 4 years ago then? I mean, we didn't have a tax increase in 2014, and that's why we talked about doing this. So, you know, there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle. And so I'm going to continue to study. I've got an idea. There's some points I'm going to go at, but that's my discussion about the CIP. I just want you to kind of understand my thinking about what that means and why, okay?
Can I clear up two things
real quick? Yeah.
One, I want to make sure that MED doesn't think I think they have a culture problem. My comment was I felt like that we failed as leaders of the city by not being able to overcome whatever that issue was. So it wasn't directed towards MED or towards council. It was the opportunity for there to be a really – let me compare I probably shouldn't do this, but let me compare water resources to the relationship they have working with the city. I feel like that's a very good working relationship. I think it was a failure on our part not to have the same good working relationship. So that was the intention of that comment. And, Rick, you said something else. I can't remember what you said because you said so much. I shouldn't say anything. I'm sorry. That's all.
And I don't – I hate – you know, I want the people – who are watching this to understand, and I hate, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I would argue that the council did do that.
Right, sure.
And it took us a year to go through that process to change the ordinance to be able to help with that, to get that relationship with water and sewer. So, I mean, my question is, did the MED want to be part of a greater part of the city at the time? Probably not, because it's like my 16-year-old, and I'm not equating MED to 16-year-olds, but my 16-year-old sure doesn't like me telling him what to do, or both of them don't, for that matter. But, you know, I think the culture that we talk about was a culture that, and PD and I have talked about this, this is not a culture that just happened overnight. This is a culture that was 80 years and 90 years in the making. I mean, from the 30s, it was an independently run organization. And as we started seeing the growth in the community, we all said, well, that may not be the best way to handle things. You know, people looked at it and said, well, it was a power play by the mayor, that he wanted more control over MED. And I mean, I mean this in all due respect to the city, because I love this city. But I don't think any of us want more responsibility than what we have to do right now. I mean, it's a tough job. And so that's why we rely on good people and our staff to do that. So, sorry.
Kurt. Hey, Ronnie, and I'm talking really to the whole council. The CIP is really a temporary document, because you know what? We have the opportunity to take whatever we want to off of that CIP. The CIP has grown because of our growth. And I think what we have to go back and realize is this. We've got some items on there that we want for Christmas, and they're wish lists. We may need to take some of those off, and I think that's where we start, because we've got some heavy-duty items on that CIP. Do we really need to do them right now, or do we push it off for another 10 years? But we've got some items on there, wish list. And so when we go back to look, I think we shouldn't get caught up what's on the CIP now. When we go back to start to review, I think that's what we should be looking at, what we can put on the CIP now and what's going to be good for the future.
Yeah, I'll tell you just too, just as far as, you know, you brought up roads you got a fair point on it. I'm okay with what your opinion is. You know, the reason that I have been one that in these meetings have brought up the idea that, you know, that roads might be a good way for some of this lump sum, you know, so if we do some more immediate spending with some of the money or whatever, you know, that basically all comes from the standpoint of we rely on engineers to tell us, here's what you need to have to not have a bunch of F-level intersections all through your city. You got to do this project, that project, that project. I mean, you know, the reality is there's a backlog. There's probably always going to be a backlog, and I don't think this is going to fix it.
Right.
I just think this might help us get a little bit caught up if we, you know, if even if it's the best example, I think the easy example is Cherry Lane. You know, if this gets us in a position to be able to do a Cherry Lane type, you know, where you take all that pressure off of 231 and Broad Street and Thompson Lane, you know, the 840, you know, all those things that, you know, if we all felt like that was one that we thought we're going to do anyway.
Right.
We just, that's $40 million we don't have to borrow. You know, I think it's important to, and this is something that's, I'm going to go down a little bit of a quick list, and I'm going to try to make it snappy on this deal, but here's some things that, just notes that I've written as we go. There's a lot of little points. But, you know, one thing to know is by us not borrowing money, it does have a positive impact on our operating budget. You know, it is literally, let's just use the Cherry Lane example. We either decide to do it or we decide not to do it. If we decide to do it, it's $40 million. We either got to borrow or we spend. If we spend it instead of borrow it, it's $3 million a year to our operating budget that we don't have. You know, so there is an impact on our operating as, you know, as it comes back from CIP. You guys all know this. I'm saying this for the public to understand that. Those things matter. And most of the way people think about it in the public is it's just less debt, which is a good, you know, most people think is a good thing. I agree. Okay. The reason it's a good thing is because it helps our recurring expenses
right. On
our operating lines. Okay. So I'm gonna make a few, I think I've already talked about that. I brought up, this is something that's important for me, I think, bring up now, is that I brought up the idea of the fiber network a couple of weeks ago. And since then tried to do a little bit of work on learning as much as I can with limited, with limited resources or whatever, or time and all that kind of stuff. But I've had a couple conversations, and I think the way that there will be a way that we can handle that. And Chris, I'm going to ask you to come up here. Here's, you know, my concerns, what I realized, and it took a little bit of introspect for me. You know, I told you guys a couple weeks ago, is really sort of just a heartburn issue for me. You know, there was just something in the back of my mind that told me, you know, I'm not sure we want to have just built this thing out and then just give up control over it. So what I kind of recognized was that, you know, after my comment the other day, and I had a conversation with Chris, and then I had another conversation with Chris after I did a little more introspect, which was, you know, really the core issues that I was worried about was not whether, you know, necessarily the whether or not we can walk out there and put our hands on a 12 tubes of fiber with 12 strands each in them. You know, it was really more, are we going to protect ourselves from being in the situation that we were in a couple years ago with Comcast, or with any provider in the future for that matter? How can we, you know, that's the reason we kind of started that project. So do we want to just turn over control of that? So how can we get a little bit of that? How can we keep a little bit of that control, you know, where we just don't give it up? Your competition was sort of an original answer, and I think what I told Mr. Jones was I just don't know that I'm completely satisfied with that. You know, and this is one of those things that you go to. We had our last conversation today at 4-ish, 3:30 or something like that. You know, this is the reason why it's so frustrating when people walk up and say, you already got your mind made up, it's a done deal, and you just wasting our time and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm having conversations at 3:30 or 4 o'clock today trying to iron these things out and get to a position where we think it's a good thing for the citizens and the ratepayers. So, you know, the one thing was the city building infrastructure, the connectivity for the city buildings, you know, and the reason, you know, it's not just Comcast or the broadband provider. It's also, you know, this is our police station, our fire departments, you know, very important thing, you know, things to our city that are connected here. So that was one of the underlying issues that I had. The other underlying issue that I had was from an economic development standpoint. There may or may not be merit to that. I'm just going to just lay that out there like it is. But I think I'm more comfortable knowing that we do have an avenue for this. So will you tell the council kind of what we talked about as it relates to the IRU? Is that what it,
yes, Mr. Lance.
That idea might look like?
Yes, sir. And if I could, I'll be turning it over quickly to my colleague Brad Gibson, so he joined us for that conversation. But I was pleased that we got to a point where I think we're in a good spot to give the city extra flexibility. And, of course, we want to show that flexibility in all of our dealings. But that won't impact the purchase agreement that we're talking about that you might be considering later, that we can do on the other side of that, that would give the city more capability and flexibility in the fiber space. So I'm going to ask Brad to come up and talk about what we're talking, you know, what we're particularly talking about, that we could work into this after the purchase agreement is done, and it won't impact that materially at all. So, Brad, if you would please.
Thank you, Chris, Mayor, Council. What was being discussed was an IRU, an indefeasible right of use, where in essence we can take a portion of the fiber that's being discussed and whatever is appropriate for what the city needs and carve that out into a structure that would allow them access to it for an extended period of time. Many IRUs, this is pretty straightforward and happens quite often. We have one ourselves with a provider where you get access to that for 5, 10, 20 years. And we can certainly make that available to the city so they have that flexibility to use that asset. Also, I think it would be important to note in the discussion that we had would be that, you know, we wouldn't have restrictions on that. Some providers would put restrictions on how that may be able to be used, and certainly it would be unrestricted access to how the city would want to use that carve-out under an IRU.
Yeah, so the understanding that I've gotten, I'm just going to let you tell me, yeah, that's right, or fix what I say, is basically that, you know, right now we've got 12 tubes, I think is the right word, with 12 strands each in there. Fiber is the network that we currently built, kind of our little C-loop, you know, that we would be able to retain. I think we talked about at least two of those and work with the IT folks here to make sure that however our network is structured, that we got a sufficient amount to run current and likely future city buildings over the next 20 years, and that you guys would provide that to us for no cost so that we still have access to, if we need to one day light that up, that we can light it up. Is that how that works?
Well said, yes, sir.
And so that could be for connectivity for the city. That could be used for if we make if it's a smart or dumb decision to use that as some sort of economic development tool for future, you know, bring in a company in the future, we can use it for that too. It's just no restrictions, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
This is the fiber that MED has already laid. Is that what
yes.
you're saying? Okay, this so is the part fiber of my, system that's already down.
That's correct. So,
but it's not light. It's not lighted.
It's
or
dark, that's right. Dark. So part of my concern was we had just,
yeah.
you know, we just
yeah,
spent
yeah.
the money, or, you know, MED has just spent the money to put this in there. It gave us some assurance away from the broadband providers being able to kind of mess with our rates. You know, we then now keep the capability for at least 20 years. And did I understand correctly that at the end of 20 years, there's kind of a renewable option that we then at that point negotiate some sort of a renewal? And is that typically
yeah,
how that works?
An IRU can have extensions built in, and we can certainly go through the process of making sure that fits the right framework for what the city needs.
So anyway, that helped my heart burn quite a bit, frankly, about the fiber piece of that. And I just wanted to make sure I got that out to you guys because I brought it up about the fiber, you know, in our last meeting. So thanks a lot, and thank you so much for the conversation and the help and the flexibility. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay? Sir.
I want to make a couple of just quick comments. You know, I think Shane brought up the idea of some financial policies. This is something that Craig and I have talked about for several months now, and I'm just going to make it as simple as saying I'm for it. You know, if we do this, that I'm all in for talking about what our financial policies look like and whether or not those should be amended to match up to making sure we don't get ourselves in any sort of a position like what we're worried about. I told you I'm already in on the foundation idea. Got that. The other thing, one other thing that I want to make sure we talk about is, you know, Ronnie brought up the idea of it's not going to be popular, but, you know, we have got to continue this whole discussion, whether this goes on or not, the impact fees discussion, you know, that this has got to, we have got to get moving forward on that. And I don't know a better way to look at a couple of our staff members and say, this is very high on my list as it relates to.
We just got a draft. It's starting to get to the end, so we can present it probably in the next couple.
So whoever's phone that is, you've got to put $5 in the offering plate. If you don't mind, go ahead. What's that? Is it unattended phone?
It's unattended.
Then we all may need to take cover.
There's not a timer on that thing, is it? So, are you going to talk about the foundation thing?
Yeah,
go ahead. So the other thing that we've talked about is this idea of putting some of the money back and having more of a foundation-type situation or a trust or whatever it may be in order to
start over for Adam.
Yeah, because Adam, this has got a lot. This has got Adam written all over it, okay? All
right.
So this conversation has been going on for really months as it relates to what we do with the money and the risks of this and the risks of that. You know, Eddie was the one who brought it up in the meeting a couple weeks ago. Craig and I had discussions about it. So I ended up having a discussion with Adam about it. And basically, you know, the way that I understand this, so I'm just going to say some very big picture stuff. You guys can ask questions as much as you want to, but essentially it sounds like we do have the capability to take either some or all or whatever number of this money and put it into some kind of a private foundation or a trust with some restrictions, you know, that we can say these are restrictions that you have. So I can just kind of tell you on some round numbers, just some easy math for me, just so we're kind of, you know, going down a path here of what something like that could look like. This, I'm not saying this is the perfect solution. I'm just kind of saying there's got to be a starting point or a benchmark for what's in my head. If we were to dedicate $150 million of this money to something like that, and we just say a foundation type of an arrangement where the foundation can invest the money differently than the city can, you know, that they can build it very much like our pension, okay? We set it up very much like some other another couple of foundations here that most of us would be aware of, where we draw something like 4% plus the expenses off of it per year. You put $150 million of that money in something like that, and it has restrictions. Council doesn't get to it. What we get is $6 million a year off of it. You add that to the $1.8 million that Middle Tennessee Electric is going to be paying us in property taxes. Simple math here. You got $7.8 million in revenue instead of $3.2 million. And you got $100 million left over to do what, you know, roads.
Yeah,
so you got the $6 million that is very likely to go forever. It may not. But MED may not pay us $3.2 million forever. I mean, there is no guarantee that they last in perpetuity. So if they, you know, and the money flow is continued in perpetuity is what, you know, what I mean by that. You know, so if, you know, we can put this together, it may not, but it would be basically the same, similar as our pension in my mind, that we're banking on the pension being around 20 and 40 and 50 and 60 and 80 years from now. And we would bank on this too.
And to your point, Rick, in 15 years, there would be $150 million sitting in this account just like it is today, or would be today. And I would go as far as to say if there was a demand or a need to absolutely go after that money, that we should tie it up to the point that we would say if the public wants us to spend that money and take the total benefit that Rick is talking about, the $7.8 million a year. If you wanted to do away with that, all you would have to do is say, in order to access that money, it would require a referendum so that the public would understand
you're eating away at part of the funds that the city operates off of, but you would also have the ability that if there's an overwhelming demand from the public for an aquatic center or a park or a road or anything that they would want to spend it on that's in the capital improvement plan, that the public would have the option of deciding whether or not they want to spend that money. Because one concern that I have received over time has been much more the concern of what we do with the money than it is what we do with the electric department. And I think in order for us to be responsible with that money is we've all seen the significant benefits of what Christy Houston has done for our community. And I think they started out with $46 million or something like that. And not only has their money grown, but we've continually reaped benefits. I think our city government could do the same. And of course, if we put $10 million, just for rough numbers, as he had just suggested, if you put $10 million back for 15 years, then there would still be the additional, we're supposed to get paid back at about $17 million a year. If that would give you $7 million on top of what we've discussed that would be available through that 15-year period.
From the CIP stuff.
Right. So it still gives us the ability to use the money to the advantage. And we all know that the biggest concern in Murfreesboro, I think, is traffic right now, or at least that's the thing I hear most about. And so there are road conditions that we need to address, but I still think that if we could arrange a plan where the money could continually be available for perpetuity, just like the electric department would be if we didn't sell it, I think that gives us a huge benefit over where we're currently at. So just throw that out there. I'm still not going to give Ronnie a hug after the meeting, but...
But you'll want to.
But I voted for him the first time, and I'll vote for
him. It's the hair.
He does his homework.
You know, this really has me just going back and forth. In fact, it's giving me a headache. But seriously, headache. But it's so much information has been thrown at us tonight. I mean, when someone says something, I'm like, okay, I can do that. And then someone else says something, I don't know if it's a good deal. It's just I'm going back and forth. What are some of the disadvantages of us selling MED?
I mean, I think you lose control. I think that's a big disadvantage. I mean, you have an asset that's been here 80 years, so I think it could be seen as a disadvantage of losing something that you've built up. I mean, there's different people who have different ideas on how funds would be used. So, you know, I think there's several things that we would look at that would say, this is what you're, I don't want to necessarily say it would be a disadvantage. I would say this is what you're giving up and this is what you're getting. So that would be, you know, would be some of that.
And I know Mr. Smotherman was talking a second about the funds and what we're going to do with it, pulling out of the funds, and we'll probably have to have a referendum to see what the ratepayers have to say about it. Well, theoretically, if we can do a referendum on something like that, why couldn't we not do a referendum on this? I'm going to let that go. I'm not understanding why we are not asking for the total amount at once. You know, it's just like me selling my house. If I sell my house to you, Ronnie, let's say for $500,000. Mm-hmm. And you say, yeah, I'll buy your house, but I'm going to pay you in installments. Well, to me, you go out and find the money if you really want my house, because I want my $500,000. Now, to me, it kind of makes me a little nervous, because in accepting these payments, what if, let's say, a disaster happens, something that they cannot control? What about a recession? We have a recession. other things occur, what guarantee is it that we're going to get the money? And that's no disrespect, but these are things that are going over in my mind. Just a deal like this, why would we not want the full payment instead of going in installments?
Well, I think there's advantages to having the installment payments. One is it makes the rate calculations and the impact on rate a lot better because it's extended out over a period of time. The city gains the advantage of earning a certain amount on those incremental payments, and the total on that's...
We can't get 3.3% anywhere else.
No, we wouldn't be able to invest that money and gain that. We couldn't spend the money because we couldn't manage that many projects all at once. And so there are several advantages. I think in all fairness, there's advantages to Middle Tennessee Electric and to the city. So the structure adds quite a bit, I think, to the transaction itself.
It's just a lot. I feel like, and I'm going to speak for myself as a council member, that I'm really at a disadvantage in making this decision because staff has had this information well over a year, and then council is getting this, really the meat of the information, 30 days. That's hard for me to... That's really hard for me to make a decision. I mean, the meat. I'm getting more meat tonight than I've gotten in this whole deal.
All due respect, I don't think staff has had this for a year, have you? I mean,
we worked on various parts of it for quite a long time, and we set up a lot of meetings with council people to come in to meet and talk about and share as we develop the information over time. I've provided you with a lot of information and written information over time. So it hasn't been just tonight where you've had this information. There are some documents, obviously, legal documents that are typical in this type of complex transaction that frankly, they don't get done until the very end because people keep talking about it, lawyers keep talking about them. I think the substantive changes in those documents has been very limited since they were initially put out, I can't remember, a few weeks ago. October, yeah, so several weeks ago. We have shared quite a bit of information, and we've made ourselves available to council many times through the last year to meet and talk about this.
Well, with all the information, this is just me. I'm a person, I have to marinate on things. I mean, I've heard and understood some things tonight that I had not thought about before, and I'm not going to get in the eyes shooting at me by saying I need more time to think about this because I know that won't go over. But I mean, I just cannot wrap my mind around all of this information, and this is a major decision for the city. And second hardest decision I feel like I've had to make since I've been on this council. I just cannot wrap my brain around all of this right now. I can't. I'm not saying let's put it off a month, 2 months. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I cannot marinate everything we're talking about tonight. It's so many details that I have not considered a couple of these that I just really need to bring it into my decision-making. I don't know, and I know MED people, it's not fair, you know, to ask to vote for this for the next meeting, but I just cannot wrap my brain around all of this tonight to make a decision. And if we pull the decision tonight, you know, I'm probably going to have to do a no because there's so much I still got to wrap my mind around.
Let me make a few comments because the one function of being older is the fact that you learn that sometimes there's no way to some things except through some things. And, I'm not sure we could get to where we are now in evaluating and looking at this decision. In the past few years when this has come up several times, I have read more about public utilities than I ever thought. I think I've said that before. talk to more people about the implications of this decision, and it certainly has long-term implications on the quality of life of our citizens and the ability for our city government to be able to provide efficient and competent service to our citizens. So the process, often like so many things, it's not just what you do, it's the way you go about doing it. So I don't feel that we are, it's bad for us to, you know, to take our time and be deliberate. As I mentioned to our city manager, there are two things before tonight that I felt were missing. Each of us, because of the Sunshine Law, have to kind of operate in a silo. We have to do our own questioning. We have to do our own research. We have to find our own, ask our own questions. A lot of the things that we have to make a decision on have to be done independent of the conversation that we had tonight. And that's responsible government. That's, to me, it's not, we have not been flippant about this. I think, if anything, each of us have tried to process that information on our own, given our own experience, given our own perspective. Some of us have a business background. Some of us have a finance background. I appreciate all the work that my colleagues have done, independent of things that I haven't thought about. Rick, I thank you for thinking about fiber. If you hadn't pursued that, I don't know that would have gone by me, even though that was something that when I first met with Chris, I told him was the most important thing to me. I just didn't see the INET and our the protecting that asset. We have to give due consideration to a lot of different facts. And the whole process, everybody, our staff, MED people, Middle Tennessee Electric people, have given hours and hours to try to figure out what this deal is. It's not a matter of just sitting back and saying, should we do this? And arbitrarily say, yeah or no. No, because the nuances, it's like the devil are in the details. You got to get to the fine point as to what are the constitutes the deal. There's a couple of real positive things. One of our guests from out of town said something tonight that was affirming to me. Can't argue with the, argue with the evaluation. To me, that was an affirming statement that I heard tonight. That because people say, well, why didn't, you know, how much is it worth? Well, I'm not in a photographer isn't in a position to be able to evaluate what an electric system is worth, I can tell you. But that, having someone independent that represents the other side of the argument say you can't argue about the evaluation is somewhat affirming to me, because that was a question that I had. I think that we still have some time that needs to be given to this deliberation. I'm moving to the point of a decision. We've got documents in front of us that we got, the final documents, what are called substantive documents, presented to us yesterday, which is about 80 pages of legalese.
Whip.
I mean, there, I know it's corrected documents that we had received earlier, but substantive, these are the documents that the deal is going to be based on. And, you know, I think the issue is that we need a little time maybe to process this information as opposed to making a decision tonight on that. I appreciate all the work that's been done to get us to this point. I appreciate the process that we've gone in. I would encourage, again, people who have comments and want to participate in this. I forgot to make my point about the two things that we're missing. One of them was the public input, which we had earlier this evening, but there still may be public input that we need to receive. And the other thing was the comments of my colleagues. I've received and heard things tonight, as Madeline had stated, that we that I need to process a little bit myself. If the council moves to a decision tonight, fine, certainly somebody can make a motion, but I would feel more comfortable. MED people, I'm sorry that you're still in limbo, but the decision has a lot of consequences, and if we are going to be responsible in making the decision, that we think is appropriate, I don't see putting this off for a few weeks makes a big difference if we can come to consensus to make the right decision that we feel is proper.
Is that a motion?
I will make the motion to defer this to our first meeting of next year.
January 8th.
The first meeting? Well, let's...
No, we're going to be on the 15th, so it'd be the 9th, which is a Thursday.
The first general meeting.
Because the first week only has a couple days in it, so...
No, the workshop's on the
15th. Yeah, the first Thursday in January is the 2nd. The next would be the 9th. So what we were going to do is have the workshop on the 15th to do the budget.
We just need to be cognizant on January 9th, because I just looked, and I've got to go meet with a homeowners group. I think we have a pretty big
public hearing
that's coming on January 9th. So,
really?
Yeah, we had Hidden River is coming.
Is that that's right? Hidden River. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think I'm fine keeping that on. Keeping it January 9th, but I think what would be good. I mean, we've had lots of discussion. If the council will put this, we can put this under old business on January 9th, but we need to be able to, in between now and January 9th, if you've got questions you want to ask staff, but, you know,
come to a vote.
Yeah, right, January 9th, we need to be ready to make a decision, and you know, once we start putting it off, you're really looking third week of January. There's not a time frame that we have to be under, but I think, you know, with what Councilman Shacklett said, I think we do need to be cognizant to our employees at MED and also Middle Tennessee Electric.
I'll tell you, I'll further that one thing is just to say, you know, this will be a time when a lot of us are traveling and stuff like that. You know, we'll all have family in or traveling or whatever. So we'll need to do a lot by email. And, Craig, what I would ask you is that if, for example, Shane comes and asks you, you know, he comes up with a new idea or thought or whatever, that you try to be diligent with getting that out to us as a body, you know, as far as, hey, this was a point that was brought up. That way we can try to absorb as much of that as we can between now and the 9th instead of having to kind of re-go through everybody's list if there is a list. I mean, I had a pretty long list, but I feel like we've touched on all of them at some point throughout the evening. But as you know, I'm liable to come up with one or two more in the next couple of weeks, but I can't promise, but I'll try to make sure it's just very pertinent to do that. So I'm all right with it.
So we have a motion and we have a second. We're going to do that January. Madeline, you seconded it. January 9th. If we can put that on the first item under old business. And Ms. Wright, please call the roll.
Vice Mayor Scales-Harris.
Aye.
Mr. LaLance.
Aye.
Mr. Martin.
Aye.
Mr. Shacklett.
Aye.
Mr. Smotherman.
Aye.
Mr. Wade.
Aye.
Mayor McFarland.
Aye. I want to thank everyone who's come out tonight, even our gentlemen who are not here from Murfreesboro. We thank you for your comments. And I'm going to call for a five-minute recess. Don't block the door to the bathroom, please. So, we're going to stand in recess for 5 minutes. Literally, hey, council members, 5 minutes.